welcome to the Atonicast. As always, I'm Alex Roy, and I'm here with my trusty and brilliant co-host, Kirsten Korsak.
Hello.
And Edward Niedermeyer.
Hello.
This episode is really great because we're here with Abdo Mahmoud, who's the product manager from Affectiva. Is that correct, Abdo?
Correct.
And we met about a year ago at GTC 2017, mm-hmm. and we've been talking about talking this entire time, but it seems only appropriate that we talk today because we're just a little over a week since the Uber crash. And all of the amusing conversations we had about what Affectiva does and how we might demonstrate it are now cast in a different light. Mm-hmm. Because of what happened. Abdo, will you explain to us just a little bit about who you are and what Affectiva does?
Sure. So I work for a company that is a leader in emotion AI, emotion recognition. We spun out of the MIT Media Lab in 2009. And since then, we've been in market with products that are driven by understanding people's emotion, as well as cognitive state. The first market that we started with is actually market research, where we help a third of the global Fortune 100 companies around the world test people's emotion response to the online content that they put out. And that is by measuring their facial expressions as well as vocal expressions in the wild and unintrusively using computer vision and speech processing. Since 2 years ago, starting to get a lot of interest from the automotive industry, in specific around understanding of what's happening in cabin. That is around driver monitoring, or like monitoring people in order to improve their safety, but also to understand their emotion response in order to adapt the in-cab HMI to provide a better experience. And that ties in into brands trying to introduce the concept of wellness in car and essentially addressing occupants' needs. That is especially important as cars become more autonomous, the driving becomes the responsibility of the car, and the experience in the car, and it's going to be all about adapting the experience in the car and make sure that the in-cab is a comfortable environment as well as an interesting environment for the people in the car.
So this technology, I mean, I hate to jump ahead, guys. This technology could interpret a driver's, you say, wellness and emotional state. So could it function as a form of driver monitoring system in the case of, say, the Uber crash and the safety driver's state of mind and attentiveness?
Correct. So we collected around 6 million face videos around the world, as well as a good portion of in-cab data, about 42,000 miles or so, so far of driven data as of yesterday. We see a lot of patterns of distraction and drowsiness. And distraction and drowsiness are just simply one of the cognitive states that you can detect using facial and as well as vocal cues. So using that form of technology, what we're actually doing, working with OEMs and tier one suppliers like Autoliv, for instance, is working on understanding people's emotional response and understanding their response for facial and vocal cues in order to build a trust between the driver and the car. The car trusting to hand over control back when you are fully aware, and also you're trusting the car to be in control and understanding your emotional response as the car drives by. We actually demoed in CES this year that concept in their Autoliv 2.0 platform.
That's interesting. I was going to ask you about Autoliv because I was at the demo you referred to, and it looked like they had a system based on what they observed of the driver. They had variable intrusion levels of the semi-autonomous or assistance system.
Correct.
And so I'm looking here, because since it's a podcast, we can't see it, at a picture of myself, a screenshot taken of what your system interpreted of my face while smiling, and I see that the criteria were anger, joy, surprise, valence, brow raise, furrow, smile, and nose wrinkle.
Correct.
So you interpret each of these criteria moment to moment.
Correct.
So over the course of, say, 10 or 15 seconds. I could, any of these criteria, all of them could vary.
Mm-hmm.
So do you provide to an auto leave or to a manufacturer, say, the raw data and let them assign thresholds at which they determine that someone is distracted? Or do you have your own interpretive system where you say, we've hit a distraction threshold, your system should do something?
Generally, in our work with OEM and Tier 1 suppliers, we encounter both, because ultimately the OEM or the Tier 1 supplier is responsible for the experience. They understand what their driver as well as occupants want and want to project as their brand experience. So we get requests for both, and we work with them on tuning the algorithms and testing and validating over large portions of data in order to make sure that we fulfill on that experience.
So how many companies are you working with right now? How many are you actually working with in terms of what you're developing?
So we have a bunch of OEMs. We have about 4 OEMs or so that we're actively working with in projects at different levels of near production, as well as R&D on the driver monitoring side, as well as on the occupant experience side. We have at least 3 Tier 1 suppliers or more.
Okay. So I want you to go back in time like 2 months ago and think of the conversations with maybe OEMs to potentially land a deal with them and work with them or contract with them. And I'm wondering if you've had conversations with those same people post Uber crash, and do they get it more than they did before, or did they get it before? I mean, how has the attitude changed?
I think it didn't change much. OEMs and Tier 1 suppliers get the importance of driver monitoring systems, and that's why this conversation has not just started 2 months ago. It has been going on for more than 2 years in general.
So what's the limitation of getting these in cars? Explain to us why they're not in cars now then. Is it a technical challenge? Is it a financial one? Yeah.
Traditionally, systems that are doing driver monitoring, if you look at the luxury end cars, at least they've been reliant on sensors in the steering wheel. Now that the steering wheel is becoming part of the car itself, part of the driving experience itself, people are more focused around what we can do in order to monitor the driver or monitor the person behind the steering wheel. The easiest way to do that is, of course, to put a camera and just monitor their facial as well as their vocal expressions. I would say the introduction of AI in general in the autonomous world has helped OEMs and Tier 1 suppliers understand more the importance of AI and how it can help, and accelerated all of that effort in general.
So, driver monitoring is something that obviously other companies are working on, but I think the emotional component of what you guys are doing is really interesting and a little bit unique. I'm curious though, it seems like, right, distraction is fairly easy, right? Either your eyes are on the road or they're not, but then you bring in that emotional component, which I think is important to understanding distraction, it becomes a little more complex. What I'm wondering is the sort of language of cues that signals distraction or attentiveness or emotional state generally, is this universal? Is it more culturally defined? Are you looking at, you mentioned a huge number of 6 million videos. I assume they're from all around the world.
Correct.
I'm wondering, just talk to me a little bit about sort of how universal some of these things are, how maybe things, some of these cues and behaviors change maybe from culture or region to region. Is that something you're looking at? Yeah,
sure. So I was just, the one thing I would say is distraction is actually not an easy problem. If you look at distraction as just eyes on the road, eyes off the road, there are cases where distraction is about mental distraction. You could be cognitively loaded and your eyes on the road, and if the system doesn't know about that, it won't be able to pick that up. And in that case, cognitive load appears as more on your face, as facial expressions, or lack thereof in some cases. And that's why it's not just important to monitor the eyes. You have to expand beyond the eyes to all of the different other cues that you use in general. With regards to the data that we collected and cultural diversity and so on, we collected data from about 87 different countries. Facial expressions are in general universal. The intensity of the facial expression differs from one culture to another, as we observed in our data. I would also say that the driving behavior, distraction behavior, also is very country-dependent or very region-dependent in general. For instance, in the data we collected data, for instance, in two locations, in the U.S. and in Cairo. The data in Cairo is much more interesting in terms of driver distraction than the U.S.
What, can you give an example of that?
We've seen all sorts of things. The favorite example for everyone in the company is that there was a person driving around with two phones in her hand. She was switching between them, texting while honking, and it was cool. I could show you guys that video when you go back to our booth in GTC. Yes, we observe these different cultural behaviors, and in that sense, we do a lot of work in order to address that. On the modeling side, we make sure that we expose our algorithms not just to data from one region, but we sample from a lot of regions in order to make sure that we capture subtle as well as exaggerated expressions and cognitive states.
Yeah. And what kind of data do you use to correlate visual data, the videos of the people's faces and the in-car video with, you know, risk, right? Like how do you associate, you know, certain emotional states with, you know, crashes and you know, bad outcomes?
Yeah. So we do that by collecting data. When we collect data in the car, we not just collect the facial data, we also collect all of the available contextual data, whether it's the road view, whether it's the vocal channel, whether it's data from the car, such that its speed or the GPS location, and so on. And that allows us to correlate different parameters. We also label that data. So all of the data that we get, we rely on ground truth that is labeled by people who are trained to pick up facial expressions and emotions. So they go up through about 100 hours of training in order to be able to differentiate between facial expressions and emotions. And also, so we use a standard methodology that has been validated in literature, but also we have our own internal guidelines for things like drowsiness, for instance. We have our own internal guidelines or how to label for intensities, drowsiness intensities.
You were talking earlier how someone could have their eyes on the road, but they could be mentally distracted and have high cognitive loading. So what other factors come into play in that situation to try to identify that cognitive loading?
So because we use deep learning algorithms in all of our infrastructure, the input to our algorithms is all of the face. We essentially allow the models to learn about the different facial cues themselves. We teach them about the different facial expressions that occur on the face, about 20 of these different facial muscle movements. But we also allow them, after that, we fine-tune them or we allow them by themselves to learn about all of the different other facial cues that might be useful in order to predict certain outcomes.
Are you correlating your data to what the vehicle is doing and therefore know what? So a person may not appear distracted, but the car is going off the road.
Right.
So are you gathering that data as well? So you're building that data set.
Yes. So far, fortunately enough, nobody crashed in our data set, which
is
a
good
thing.
Very
but
helpful.
That's very...
Well, I mean, we're just...
No, it's not. It's not for them anyway.
No, it's helpful for everyone else.
Yeah, definitely. Yes, it would be. We do different levels of data collection. So for the extreme cases where we are trying to put people in unsafe environments, we actually don't collect that data right in the car. We collect it in lab. But for the majority of the data collection that we do, we do naturalistic data collection. So we collect data of people driving on the road and you'd be amazed to see how much of these behaviors exhibit otherwise.
Maybe rephrase my question. So the Affectiva software, are you licensing it or selling it, the software, and then it goes into a device of the customer's choosing, or are you actually selling an actual camera in which you're controlling hardware and software?
No, we are an AI platform, a software platform. We work with OEMs and tier one suppliers to customize that software to work on their chip of choosing as well as over their camera of choosing. And this has been our approach because we want to be agnostic to where they put the camera or what type of hardware they want to use.
All right, so in your agreement with your customers, are you stipulating that you get 100% of the data pulled off the cameras?
It differs between OEMs and tier one suppliers. And we have data sharing agreements with some of them. We work more on establishing our own corpus of data that allows us to develop these algorithms more robustly, but we also get a lot of data from different partners.
So this might be a silly question, but it's something that just one example that kind of captures maybe sort of the ambiguity of the challenge of this is like singing, right? Like people singing in the car.
Yeah,
I'm really curious what you guys have learned about this. Is that right? Because it seems to me that like that's something that could be both. It could help you concentrate, but it could also be distracting, kind of depending. So like what is your data found, if anything, or I don't know, just talk about that example maybe.
Singing in specific. Yes, singing is one of the more prevalent activities that we see in the car. I would say generally when people sing in the car, they actually are a little bit more on the concentrating side rather than on the distracted side.
That's really interesting.
Especially if they are alone. If you're having a conversation with someone in the car, though, that might indicate more distraction because you're thinking about how you're going to respond and so on.
Mm. Wow, that's really cool. And I assume in general, having more people, like, are people more concentrated when they're alone or more distracted alone? Because I guess, you know, with a cell phone, you're more likely to be on a cell phone if you're alone in the car, probably.
Right.
But if there's people with you, you're more likely to be in a conversation. Do you know, sort of statistically at a broad level, like which is more and less distracting?
I don't actually know that answer yet, but that would be a very interesting thing to look at. Yeah, I haven't thought about that. Hmm.
You haven't?
I have something.
We need to wrap it up. But I was curious, are you currently working with any of the companies you're working with? Are you developing programs with them specifically geared towards autonomous vehicle test drivers?
Yes. So a company that we are working with, a startup whose name is Renovo, they are a robotaxi a startup. So developing.
We know the
platform.
Renovo guys.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Good.
Yeah, we like them.
We like them as well a lot. So we've been working with Chris's team on integrating our platform into their platform. And the goal there is, again, to see applications for in-cab experience, but also interestingly, also to look at the people who are the pedestrians and try to understand a little bit more about their intent and how do we, and if we can detect that.
Oh, so you're going to be gauging sort of pedestrians' emotions on the outside as well? Am I understanding that correctly?
No, it's a little bit more about like intent to pass. So there's a subtle kind of a subtle conversation that happens between you as a driver and a pedestrian
on a
crosswalk.
Okay.
And the idea was to see if we can use our technology to address that problem as a robotaxi, we need to interact with these, with pedestrians as agents. But we're more focused on also understanding the occupant and adapting the in-cab experience as it essentially evolves.
Interesting. So as part of the podcast, now that you're part of the AutonoCast family, you have to pass one final test.
Oh, whoa.
But it's
a
fun
hard test.
No, it's easy. Alex, do you want to explain?
We have here an advanced copy of the young adult fiction novel Autonomous, in which an autonomous vehicle kidnaps several teenagers and scrapes their social media histories and to reveal fear and terror. And we would like to ask you to read two paragraphs They're very short and they're very entertaining, and I doubt you'll be able to get through them.
Can I read it before?
Start the first sentence right here, ending with the word landscape. Please read it at your own pace.
Interesting. The Tesla Predator was a Christina's white whale, a beast taunting the fringes of the game, skirting the edges of the LiDAR map. Its green outline was thicker than the others, as if Otto knew to infuse the rendering, which the special magic, whatever demon, fell off its transmission.
You're half done.
She suspected the Predator was equipped with a radar. It played conversely, like a chess player bidding her time, thinking several moves ahead. In short, it acted like Otto. Unless the Predator's driver and the navigator were lucky, she was pretty sure that the car was seeing the landscape. See, so if there is a in-cab monitoring, the car could actually recognize that she's very stressed and do something about it. Because I'm sure that these systems are not meant to kill us all.
Yeah.
That was the best reading and interpretation of this work. Again, that was the book Autonomous, read by Abdel Mahmoud, the product manager of the company Affectiva. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Where can we learn more about your company?
So visit our website at affectiva.com. We have a lot of information there about what we do, who we work with, as well as we're automotive, as well as other industries.
Wonderful. Edward, what are you working on? Where can we learn more about you?
You don't want to know anything about me, but if you do, you can find me at Tweetermeyer on Twitter.
And you can find me at Kirsten Korosek on Twitter as well.
You can find me asking Tesla to borrow a car, put Affectiva software in it, and watch Ed try to drive it without enjoying it. I'm Alex Roy, 144 on all platforms. Thank you.